January 27, 1987, 8:30 a.m., Hearing Room E. Public hearing on House Bill 2208, 2210, and 2213.
I'll begin. Call the House Transportation Committee to order. First, we have a little memorandum from staff, from the chief clerk, on deadlines for introduction. Deadline for introduction of measures says the deadline is February 16th. No measure shall be accepted by the desk for introduction in the House after 5 p.m. on the 36th calendar day. Does anyone know what day of the week the 16th comes
Monday.
On? Monday. Okay, it's on a Monday then.
That doesn't mean we can't do it in a committee, though.
No, but we can have committee bill, can't we?
That's the committee deadline as well.
Oh, it's committee deadline. Oh, wait a minute. Where does it say that?
But you could reserve two emergency numbers, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Well, you've got two.
You can also negotiate.
As well as House committees, but we have three then, don't we each? After that time,
yeah,
three
two
priorities.
After that, two.
Or two, yeah.
Priority.
I thought we had three last time. Two this time.
Whatever it is.
Okay. Today we have public hearings on three House bills, 2208, 2210, and 2213. And I see that we have Tony DiLorenzo on 208 and 213. Unless Vanita has to get back over there, or you don't care if you're first, second, or third, why don't we just have Tony come up and do 208, 2208, and 2213, and then we'll go to 2210 when he finishes.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Tony DiLorenzo, Assistant Administrator for Driver Services in the Motor Vehicles Division. House Bill 2208 is designed to fix several code problems that we identified and brought to the attention of the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation. What I'll do is to just go briefly through the bill, a section at a time, and explain what the problem was and how the bill fixes it. Section 1 is designed to address a problem with student emergency permits. In the old code, these permits were available only to students who'd been suspended under the juvenile license denial law, where students can be suspended for alcohol and drug violations, whether they involve the use of a motor vehicle or not. Somehow in the code rewrite, those student emergency permits were expanded to include all kinds of suspensions. And this bill simply limits the availability of those emergency permits once again to
Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I'm remembering vaguely a bill we had in judiciary last session, and I thought dealt with this. I could be wrong, but I know the discussion came up, and it maybe had to do with more than just juveniles, but there was talk about juveniles who were employed and couldn't get to their job. Did that relate to this particular section of the code?
I think it did. We dealt with something like that last session, I remember, and there was discussion about concerning whether or not juveniles should, in fact, have a suspension if it wasn't driver-connected.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that, Representative?
Yeah,
Hayden?
I don't remember that.
Yes, seems to me we did talk about that in this committee. I know I brought it up at one time anyway.
But as far as you know, this particular topic wasn't discussed that you remember.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. Vanita?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Vanita Howard from the Motor Vehicles Division. That was not discussed in the last session because this particular problem was not discovered until after the code passed and we found that something had been dropped. There is, I believe, in House Judiciary, this session, a bill to restore some language to that area of hardship on juvenile denials and teenagers in general. That is another, I think it's in another bill, and I'm sorry, I don't remember which one, but this area is really one that we didn't know about in the last session, because it wasn't until it took effect that we started finding a few glitches here and there.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Benita, before you leave, Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Does this pertain to all, this code change to all denials, in other words, license of age groups, older people?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rajati, there is other law, really, that deals with what other people can do outside of the emergency permit area, and that's the occupational permits that deal with, you know, how people get a license for that kind of thing. This is simply trying to get us back to where we were in the driver licensing laws before the code rewrite, which was not supposed to make substantive change, if you remember those famous words, but occasionally did.
Well, what I'm getting at is that I happen to have a case at home right now. An elderly gentleman had a slight accident. And in that accident, it triggered him having to go back and take his examination, which he now no longer can do. In other words, he can't pass. He is absolutely being held home, been able to go get groceries, parts for his machinery or anything else. I mean, he can't do a thing. He can't drive. I can't get a permit for an occupational license for that gentleman to go. Even to a, we used to be able to go, say you stay on Highway 11 or whatever, and you don't get onto this one, you don't go to this intersection and all that, and they stay in this route. I can't even get that for him anymore. So I'm wondering if the change in the code, we've done something that triggered that, because they say they can't do it by law.
Chairman, Representative Rajati, normally we do allow those people, if they pass the test on a restricted route, to have that kind of a license still, and that doesn't relate to this either. It's called a restricted license. Maybe if you would give that name to Mr. DiLorenzo,
well,
we can check it out. And
the
see
testing they're doing is not on the route that he would need to go. They're doing it in town, and he can't pass the driver's test in town. He doesn't want to go to town. He wants to go to town, all right, but he wants to go in the back way to the Safeways. And I can't do that. Well, he's only 94 years old. I don't know why he can't have a driver's license. Good Lord.
I defer to Mr. DiLorenzo on that.
We will investigate. Can you give me the gentleman's name?
Vernon Igo.
And how do you spell that last name?
I-G-O.
More like no-go instead of I-go, isn't it?
You know, the old guy can drive pretty good. I rode with him the other day. But he gets excited, and it bothers him when he gets into traffic. He doesn't want to go into traffic. But he wants to be able to get a loaf of bread once in a while.
Representative Hayden.
I'm not sure I really understand the rationale here. If we have a youngster who has indulged or overindulged in alcohol or drugs and has gone out on the weekend and significantly endangered other people, we're going to evidently we're going to give them a special permit to drive. But if they have an overload violation, we're not going to give them a special permit to drive. Do I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, if they have an overload violation, we're not going to take their driver's license away.
Okay, that's not a suspension then?
No. Overload is not a suspension. In fact, they could have several of them and nothing would happen.
It
and
says,
this can involve suspensions based on just a minor in possession. They're caught at a party. You know, no driving whatsoever involved.
Oh, I see. These are not necessarily driving.
Not
offenses.
Necessarily driving no. Offenses at all.
Right.
This is a bill that, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he was the principal of Ashland High School at the time. Is that starting up? I see.
If I may.
And it's designed to discourage the consumption of alcohol by juveniles, and is not necessarily related to driving at all.
Representative Hayden, continue if you wish.
Yes, thank you. Your testimony here says that special permits may be issued for any of several suspensions, including failure to appear in court, unsettled judgment, and overload violations. Do you in fact suspend people for overload violations? Do you take their license away?
No. I didn't think so.
Sure have.
Overload violations. There it is right there in the testimony. I must confess I didn't actually prepare this testimony. That's possible, but that's what's happened in the new code, is that this special permit has been expanded to include all these other suspension types, and the original intent was just to limit it to the people who'd lost their license for minor possession.
Just one more thing, please, Mr. Chairman, if I may. Well, I'm sympathetic to getting the code, the house, you know, nice and clean and tidy, but I wouldn't want to be put in the position of issuing a permit for what I would consider a fairly serious offense and not giving a permit for what looks like a fairly minor offense.
Well, we do have broad authority for most other types of suspensions to issue occupational permits so that people can get back and forth to work, and that's a whole separate section of the code. So we do have broad authority to allow people to drive for the purposes of earning a living.
I think we better clarify what the motor vehicle code allows in the way of suspension as far as overload violations are concerned. Can we do that this morning somehow?
Yes, we can, Mr. Chairman.
Vanita? I'll ask Representative Peterson and Representative Young after this.
Mr. Chairman, Vanita Howard. Sometimes I feel like the division historian, but we do not take any action on size and weight violations, period. They are not required to be reported to us by the courts. So we don't know about a size and weight violation that occurs out there. They were eliminated from one of those, from the list of convictions that must be reported to us by the courts. So I'm not sure we could blame an overload on the word processor perhaps for overload violations being in the testimony.
I didn't notice it in the bill.
Yeah, I think that must be in here.
All right, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess some additional clarification. I'm in the process of working on a bill that would deal with this also, and the concern in Southern Oregon is this legislation that was passed through the instigation of a high school principal in Southern Oregon said that any juvenile in possession, illegally in possession, would have their license removed. What's happening now, and I guess the way the law was originally written, is youngsters who may be in the park, not in a motor vehicle at all, are picked up, lose their driver's license. They were doing something illegal, but they were not driving. There has been a great deal of interest in my district to write legislation to change that. Now, I guess the question I have to ask you, is this going to allow that change? Could you run by one more time just exactly what this does in terms of giving you the authority to allow these youngsters to drive?
This simply puts the code back the way it was when the law was originally passed, which said that in certain situations when, let's take the student who lost his or her license because of drinking beer in the city park. The old law allowed us, and even the current law does too, the problem with the current law is it's too expansive, but allows us to issue a special permit in certain situations to allow the student to get back and forth to school if the student has no other way to get back and forth to school. And this, I assume this would typically be students in rural areas where they're way out in the country. There's no school bus, there's no public transit, there's no nothing, and they're simply not going to get to school if they can't drive their own car. So it's just that narrow situation. But it means that if a student here in Salem, presumably, who gets caught drinking in Wilson Park next door and lives on a school bus route, is not going to get one of these permits. We'll have to suffer the suspension, assuming that the court orders it.
Representative Gray.
Yes. I have a constituent that has the same problem that Representative Peterson does. And in that case, it affects the permit, not a driving privilege. It's a learner's permit. And it was a situation where this girl that was just under 15 was at a party, and there was no driving. None of the kids even had cars that were there, and everybody had been drinking, and she admitted that she'd been drinking. She was the only one that was written up, and then she couldn't get her learner's permit. Would this preclude you from allowing her to have a learner's permit?
I would think, Mr. Chairman, Representative Young, I would think in a situation like that, once again, if there was an emergency, it was the only way that this person could get back and forth to school. Although in this case, I think there might be a problem, because a learner's permit requires that there be an adult in the car with them. And so this permit allows the student to drive back and forth unaccompanied, so there might be a problem in even giving this person a learner's permit. Keep in mind, the purpose of the law was not so much highway safety as an anti-drug and alcohol abuse measure. That was the purpose of the law. I don't think it was even sold to the legislature as a highway safety measure.
It seems that very unfair, though, when someone 15 or 16 years old is drinking with someone 18 years old, and the 15-year-old is severely penalized, including increasing insurance costs and so forth and so on, and the 18-year-old, if he's drinking away from the vehicle, isn't penalized at all, other than minor in possession. He has nothing to do with the driving record. And I can't... To me, the severity of the penalty as far as the person under 18, and the magic number is his 18th birthday, where it has nothing to do at all with maturity in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion, is just grossly unfair. And I realize that, you know, it's a real hardship on the family, because if the kid's gonna drive, and even you know, later on, the insurance costs within that 3-year period that we just established the other day are gonna still be awfully high. Are we gonna be able to get into driver's license suspension for other than juveniles and so forth soon, I hope? Because I have a constituent that has a problem too. I'm sure all of us have. In this particular situation, it was the fact that he didn't renew his driver's license and was suspended, and apparently it's on his record, and he had an insurance increase because of that. Very simple little thing. Just not an overlooked renewal and the suspension. And then he got stopped for some other reason, and because he was suspended, problem.
I'll be happy.
We can get into it. Not today. I don't want to get into it now.
I'll be happy to investigate.
Because we have a session at 10. But there'll be another day soon, I'm sure, when we can deal with that, I hope. Or I could talk to you one-on-one on it.
That would be fine. I'd be happy to investigate any of your...
Let's do it that way. I don't want to open a whole can of worms. Okay, continue, Tony. Oh, wait. Representative Jolin.
Frankly, I don't believe that this bill, with its amendments, does anything to address Representative Peterson or Young's concern. As stated earlier in the testimony, the law was created to persuade youngsters, really, not to abuse alcohol or drugs. And wherever they are, whether it be in a car or in a park, this law is applicable, and their privileges can be taken away as far as being permitted to learn to drive or to drive. And simply put, then it's up to, under current law, it's up to them to decide whether one's going to be allowed a special permit or not. And I'd like to pursue, frankly, before I take action on this, I don't have a constituent with problems, but I have some of the same concerns that Peterson and Young both have brought forward. And before I would be willing to act on this, I'd like to pursue and investigate the concept of limiting this type of application only to those who are actually driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Just a minute. Let me get this straight now.
In other words, you want to give privileges to those that were driving and not privileges to those that weren't?
No, 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 no. I say the punishment ought to only be in order for those who are actually driving while drinking or taking drugs.
Thank
you, Representative. Not someone in the park.
Thank you, Representative. I agree with you.
Section 2 of the bill is a minor code correction. The word permit is used in 807-250, which deals with occupational licenses, when the term driving privilege should be used. In the new code, permit and driving privileges are two distinctly different terms. Permit is something less than a full license, which is given out under certain specific circumstances.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Young.
This goes back to my other question. There could be a reason that somebody needs to learn to drive when they're 15. And if we change this, you can't permit them to have a permit.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Young.
I'm continually amazed that you know, you come in and say that these things were done without any thought or anything else, and that there are glitches in the system, and I don't think that is a glitch in the system. I don't see why it can't include permits. And then what happens is, when you call DMV, they say, oh, we're not allowed to do that because the legislature won't let us do that. And why take permits out when it may be important for somebody to learn to drive so that they're in the position to get a license?
Mr. Chair, Representative Young, this bill in no way restricts our authority, in no way changes our authority to issue emergency permits to students who've been suspended for consumption of alcohol.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about somebody that wants to get a learner's permit to learn to drive. As I see it, you're permitted to do that under this, and you wouldn't be if we change it. Because I'm not talking about a driving privilege. I'm talking about a permit to learn to drive.
Mr. Chair, Representative Young, once again, this doesn't change our authority with respect to students at all. Who've been suspended for alcohol and drug offenses. In other words, what the code rewrite did is it allowed us to issue these special emergency permits to students who were suspended for reasons which have nothing whatever to do with drug and alcohol abuse. It extends it to fail to appear and all kinds of other things, well beyond the original legislative intent. And so this doesn't really change what we can do as far as...
Tony, there are two types of permits or more. But one is an emergency permit to allow someone who isn't on a bus route to get to and from school. The other is a situation where a person's picked up for an alcohol or drug charge, a juvenile, that doesn't have a learner's permit, doesn't have a driver's license. You can't take away something they don't have. Does the law prohibit them from applying for a learner's permit and receiving a learner's permit if they have that kind of a juvenile charge on their record? And if it does not allow them, then that is the problem, Representative Young.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not absolutely certain. All I wanted to clarify is that this bill doesn't affect that authority. Whatever it is.
If there is any.
Yeah, if there is any, this bill doesn't affect it. If we don't have it now, we still don't have it. If we don't have it, we still don't have it under this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Tony, could you explain for the committee what driving privilege means and how that relates to driver licenses and driver permits, and how that in the definitions work together?
Driving privilege in the new code means any right to drive, whether or not the person has a permit, whether or not the person has ever held a license. It includes the right to apply, there are people out there who simply have never gotten a license, and when they are arrested for drinking and driving, we want to be able to suspend them. We don't want our suspension authority to be limited to just people who've gotten a license.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what driving privilege is in the new code. And it was a concept that was really around even before the new code was
written. Yeah, I can certainly see the need for that. I mean, if you're just dealing with licenses and a person is unlicensed and they don't come under the law.
But I'll have to admit, I'm not absolutely certain if somebody who is suspended under this law would be precluded before they've actually gotten a license would be precluded from applying for an instruction permit.
Well, I wish
and
we could clarify that.
Then I would be happy to double check on that.
Representative Young? Yeah.
In reading this, I don't see how we're talking about just youngsters in this. But I had a problem with a Hispanic gentleman whose doctor had written a letter and he was suspended. And then subsequently, prior to the suspension, it was found out that he wasn't going to be impaired to the point where he couldn't drive. And you can't imagine how hard it was to get a license for that gentleman. At the same time, his wife's driver's license had expired. She'd had licenses in two other states, and there was virtually nothing that DMV could or would do to facilitate her getting her permit and getting her through the process. And I'm real reluctant to do anything that makes it any harder for people to deal with DMV because I probably spend over a day's time away from work getting these people moved back and forth to the DMV office and assisting them in something that I think was just a runaround. I want to have confidence that we're not giving you restrictions or putting restrictions on you that makes it less likely that you'll be able to respond to those kind of needs.
Well, let me just...
Because it does talk about people that have been suspended for medical reasons and that type of thing in here, in the changes. On page 2, down at line 36 through 42.
What page?
Page 2.
Page 2. 36. Page 2.
And this gentleman's doctor had sent a letter in saying that because of stroke, his sight would be impaired, and as it turned out, there wasn't any impairment of his vision, and so the doctor sent another letter in prior to the suspension, and DMV said, hey, we can't do anything about that, it's already in the works, you're going to have to wait, and the state medical, Dr. Foster's office anyway, had to go through the thing. It was about 2 weeks that the guy had no way of getting back and forth. His wife had no way of driving or anything. And all of this was started prior to the suspension.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Young, those kinds of problems don't really have anything to do with what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. All I can suggest is that when you have those kinds of constituent problems, that you call me directly. And often I can help.
Yeah, but what that tells me is if you have somebody in your corner, you can get decent service and the kind of service from the state that you pay taxes to get anyway. And to me, that really bothers me. The people that have been getting a runaround from your Department of Motor Vehicles for 2 weeks can come to me and I can get it fixed in another 2 weeks. And I think it would never have been fixed if they hadn't gotten a hold of me or Senator Hamby. And it's fine for you to give me your number doesn't satisfy the problem of whether we're giving you the kind of authority that we need to give you to solve problems out there for people that have driver's licenses. And it shouldn't be on a privileged basis.
Steve.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tony, we had talked about, before really getting into the bulk of the bills, kind of talking about how the licensing system works. And at some point, I'd like to have give you the opportunity to do that for the members and get more into the definitions. Right now is probably not the appropriate time to do that, but before we get too far into this, I think that might be beneficial for members to do that.
Representative Brigiotti.
Tony, I've been in this system quite a while, since 77, and serving on this committee. Back when I first started going back into my district, people knowing that I was their representative, there was a way to solve almost every problem that arrived, going through Vanita or somebody but now, unless there's been a drastic change in the last 4 or 5 years, which I feel now it's getting tougher and tougher to solve all of these problems. Now, when was the big change? Have we changed the law to make it where you're more restrictive, Bunny? Representative Young is right on track. It's tougher now than it was 5 years ago to get things to happen for people that are paying your wages and mine too. And I don't know. I'm really a little worried about signing something that's changing the code that I don't know enough about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brigiotti, and Representative Young, I'm frankly, shocked to hear that, because I thought we were giving good service, and I'm really surprised. This is the first I've heard. Requires physicians who treat disorders of the nervous system to report to the state health officer. And when we get those reports, we will ask the person to get medical clearance based on that report. If they do not obtain medical clearance within a certain period of time, we give them quite a bit of time. We then issue a suspension notice until such time as they do get clearance through our medical program, which involves.
That's not the way it worked in the case I was involved in. The letter went from the physician to the department, probably through Dr. Foster's office, but then there was a notice of suspension without any hearing involved in it. And we actually contacted them prior to the suspension and said, call the doctor and he'll tell you that his opinion has been reversed, and they said, gee, we can't do anything. The wheels have started to turn, and rather than stopping the suspension, it took 2 weeks after that to get it reinstated, and it was waived. But this doesn't cover that, as I read it. A suspension because a letter came through from the physician.
Well, I represent Mr. Chair, Representative Young. I can't really comment on, without knowing the specific of that situation, and I would be very happy to look into that.
No, I'm not worried about the specifics of that. I'm saying if the same thing happened 90 days after the session, would that person be reinstated without a fee? And if he were, how would you justify it with the changes that you propose?
If the legislature makes the changes that we are suggesting here, we will reinstate that person without a fee. If the legislature decides to leave the statute the way it is, we would start charging a fee whenever we suspend under our authority in 809.410 sub 14. I think we would be.
And that includes a letter from a physician is involved also, is inclusive.
Yes, that would probably include that situation.
Why don't you find out if we need to specifically address that? Or we don't. In other words, you think this gives you the authority to determine in cases like Representative Young just brought up, whether or not you're going to charge a fee for reinstatement.
We should be charging the fee now, probably. And we won't with these changes. But if these changes aren't made, we should start charging the fee.
But you haven't been since the Motor Vehicle Code was revised.
That's right.
And then the Attorney General came along, or one of his people, and said, you can't continue to do this because the law doesn't give you that right.
Yes, that's what we're doing now, I think, is marginal from a legal point of view, and we would prefer that it be that our authority be made explicit so that there's no doubt in anyone's mind.
Okay, well, just so it's explicit in the instance that Representative Young just brought up.
Yeah, my sense is that in that situation, we probably really don't have the authority right now, even though we're doing it.
Yeah, but you also said that you probably would have the authority if we passed this. And
yes.
I would rather move beyond the realm of probability into one of being certain.
Which is why we've made this proposal to you.
But you, when you make the proposal, excuse me, Mr. Chair, then you say it probably will fill the bill on it.
Oh, it definitely will. Maybe I didn't make that clear.
No.
Yes, absolutely. There will be no doubt that in situations, any medical situation, we will have full authority to waive the fee, and we will waive the fee. No doubt whatsoever with this change. No ambiguity with the change.
Thank you. Let's go along here.
One last section. And here, I'm going to have to say that we're going to ask you to reconsider a change that we made earlier. I'm sure there have all been times in your lives when you wanted to reconsider something that you had done.
Are you on section 4?
Daily, on my part.
Are you on section 4 now?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair.
I wondered about this. I thought it was fine.
What happened was, in the old financial responsibility law, there was some authority for us to suspend when we get suspensions, note suspensions, not convictions, from another state. It's frankly not an authority we've done much with in the past, and we initially proposed to eliminate that authority entirely. But several people within and without our agency have said, do you really want to give that up? There might be a time and a place for this. There were some things that bothered us, and what happened is in the code rewrite, that authority got expanded because of the way the new code is structured. That authority was expanded, made mandatory. We have no discretion the way the code is written right now. Furthermore, we are required to put whoever we suspend under financial responsibility. And whenever we suspend, even if financial responsibility would not normally be required for somebody suspended for the same reason here in Oregon. So what we're asking the committee to do now is to restore 809-400 sub 2, but change shall to may, and delete the last sentence on lines 24 and 25. That way, and I can assure the committee that we would exercise this authority then only after adopting an administrative rule, so that we would spell out in advance clearly for everyone just exactly how we would propose to use this authority. Is there
Peterson?
So you're saying, if I understand correctly, that you've never really used this anyway?
I make that confession, yes, here
so
today.
So not at all? I mean, there's no experience you can
That's
think
right,
of.
Not at all. I can point to no experience.
So you can do whatever you want if you're an Oregon driver, as long as you don't do it in Oregon. Is that right? I mean, you can go to Idaho and have a...
Mr. Chairman, no, that is not true.
Well, what is true then?
What is true is that if we receive any kind of a serious conviction from another state, we're going to suspend your Oregon driving privileges for the period of time required by Oregon law. And it turns out that we do receive suspension notices of Oregon drivers from other states, but it turns out that nearly all of them involve drinking and driving, and they're usually a companion to a conviction. So we would be suspending in any event. But yes, if you were convicted of drinking and driving, reckless driving, negligent homicide, assault in another state, you will lose your Oregon driving privileges based on Oregon law. That is required by the driver license compact.
Well, the offense has to be an offense in Oregon.
Yes,
doesn't it?
That's correct.
That you would be suspended for.
Yes, it has to be an offense in Oregon. But in general, you cannot just do whatever you want in another state and escape penalty here in Oregon. Furthermore, we have signed a reciprocal agreement with the state of Washington under authority.
I remember that.
Granted us by the last session, and we are now suspending your Oregon driving privileges if you ignore a traffic citation in the state of Washington.
And vice versa.
So, and we have sent letters to Idaho and California and Nevada to see if they would do the same for us.
Didn't we try to do that with California the last time?
We tried. They don't have the authority. We've written them a letter and told them of our interest, and I'm hoping that one of these days they'll put that to their legislature. But right now, but they don't have the authority.
Yeah, across the border.
But this section of law, if you put it back in the way we're suggesting, might allow us to suspend in some other situations, perhaps. Someone is suspended for perhaps a medical reason in another state, would allow us to suspend here, perhaps financial responsibility violations. But like I say, we wouldn't do it without an administrative rule, so everybody would get clear advance notice about what we were going to do with it. But we're just concerned that it might be throwing away too much to throw it away completely. But it definitely causes problems the way it is right now, because right now it is mandatory. And of course, that making it, with it being mandatory, it creates some interesting problems. We do get, as I say, convictions and suspensions based on drunk driving in another state. And that, with the law the way it is now, we've got a conflict. In one section of the law, driver license compact, we must suspend your license from the conviction. We must suspend the license based on Oregon law. So 1 year if it's a first offense. So far, so good. But now under 809-400 sub 2, we have to take that suspension and suspend your Oregon driving privileges until you get cleared in the other state. And let's just assume, to make things really unpleasant, that the other state has a 3-year suspension for a first drunk driving offense. So on the one hand, we're suspending on Oregon law, and on the other hand, we're taking exactly the same offense and making a suspension based on the other state's law. So the two suspensions are in conflict. And the whole idea behind the compact is that you are punished in Oregon for what you do in another state based on Oregon law, not the law of another state. In fact, you don't want to delegate to another state legislative authority. So that's why we initially wanted to strike it out. But I think if we make it a may, we can do some things with it that would enhance highway safety and be equitable. That concludes my testimony.
Fine. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2213. How long can we expect? We don't know how long. I don't want to get into this if it's going to take us more than 5 minutes or 6 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, when you talk about basic speed rule, fuel conservation, and truck class, it takes a little longer than 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, then we'll...
We're out of time.
Mr. Chairman.
I think we better not get into this at the moment.
Mr. Chairman, may I just say, after the rather intense hearing we've just had, I'd like to say that last month I bought a car in Salem. I went to a branch DMV office, was treated very, very well. The whole thing was done very expeditiously. I was in and out of there in 20 minutes. I was very impressed.
Good. Well,
did they know who you were?
New employee. With that, we'll adjourn for the day.